General Treasurer Seth Magaziner, welcome back to the Publix Radio.
Thank you for having me. Good to be here.
When you announced your campaign for governor on Tuesday, you emphasized an economic message. You say you want to extend the American dream to more Rhode Islanders, and you pointed to three main areas: education, innovation, and infrastructure. You offered a laundry list of proposals. How much will it cost to implement this vision if you're elected?
Well, you're right that I am running for governor on an economic platform. I want to build an economy that is stronger and more broad-based and truly works for everybody. We will be coming out with detailed proposals as we go through the course of the campaign that will include cost estimates. But, you know, within those buckets, it will include major investments in things like universal pre-K, more support for career tech programs in the high schools, more support for English language learners, broadband access, 21st century infrastructure, expanding our supply of affordable housing. These are the kinds of big investments that we have to make in order to build the economy of the 21st century, and that's what we have to do in Rhode Island.
We just heard you say you'll spell out more details about your proposals in the time ahead. I hear what you're saying, but at the same time, it sounds like this could be a lot of new spending. What is your thinking about how you will pay for this kind of ambitious agenda?
Well, budgets are statements of priorities, right? And so my priorities are going to be those things that catalyze economic growth and broad-based opportunity. So that's education and workforce training, because at the end of the day, the best jobs go to where the best talent is. And so we need to invest big time in training the workforce and providing high-quality education for everyone. 21st century jobs need 21st century infrastructure. So not just roads and bridges, but also things like broadband and climate resiliency and high-speed rail.
Sure, but how will you pay for all this?
Well, again, by prioritizing it within the state budget. We have a $13 billion state budget. Budgets are statements of priorities. And every governor submits a budget that reflects his or her priorities. My priorities are going to be in these areas.
During your campaign announcement, you talked about how the American dream has become more elusive for more Americans in recent decades. Certainly, there are many complex factors that contribute to that: globalization, technology, trade agreements, deindustrialization. So are you overselling your ability to reshape Rhode Island's economy?
No, I don't think so. You know, Rhode Island used to be a center for economic innovation, you know, going all the way back to Slater Mill and the birthplace of the Industrial Revolution, but also in more modern times. We have been a center for economic growth in our recent history, and I think we can be again. It just requires making smart investments and prioritizing the right things. In Rhode Island, we were historically a manufacturing-based economy. Many of those jobs left, first to go to the South and then to go overseas. And we've been slower than many other states in transitioning from a manufacturing economy to more of a knowledge-based economy that is tethered to 21st century industries. But there is a playbook. This transition from a 20th century economy to a 21st century economy has worked in other places. It's worked in Pittsburgh. It's worked in Boston. There is a playbook here. We just need to follow it.
Well, speaking of efforts to try to improve the economy, you were sometimes described as a protege of former Governor Gina Raimondo. You worked for her venture capital firm and you succeeded her as state general treasurer. She talked about a lot of the same stuff about improving Rhode Island's economy when she first ran for governor in 2014. How would you assess the strengths and shortcomings of her efforts to improve the economy?
Yeah, so Governor Raimondo and I worked closely together on some economic initiatives, and I credit her for prioritizing economic growth in her agenda. There were also times when she and I had disagreements, and in those cases, I went in the direction that I thought was best for the people of Rhode Island. You know, for example, exiting the hedge fund investments that I inherited in the state pension system and firing the financial advisor that was involved in 38 Studios. Overall, I give Governor Raimondo a lot of credit for prioritizing the economy. We worked well together on a number of economic initiatives. But at the end of the day, when I made a decision for what to support and what to prioritize, I went with what I thought was best for the people of the state, and that's the approach that I will take as governor as well.
If, as you say, there is a playbook for generating new jobs and a new kind of economy, where did Governor Raimondo fall short in not effectively implementing that playbook?
Well, I think that we made some progress as a state in strengthening Rhode Island's economy, modernizing Rhode Island's economy in the years leading up to the pandemic. Then the pandemic came, and like the rest of the country, we entered a recession or a recessionary type environment. But while I credit the state for making some progress in the years before the COVID-19 pandemic, we were starting from such a low place economically that the job couldn't have gotten done in just 4 or 5 years. We need to continue to prioritize the right things to make that process, that progress continue. And now we are at a really unique moment where we have an opportunity with all of this federal money coming in to make some really good decisions to not just build an economy that looks like what we had before, but to do better. On the other hand, the worst thing that we could do is go back to more of the same and sort of the old school style of politics in the State House that were not as conducive to economic growth.
General Treasurer Seth Magaziner, you mentioned the federal stimulus. Rhode Island is, the state is getting more than $1 billion that has to be spent by sometime in 2024. If you were driving that ship, how would you prioritize the spending of that money and to get the biggest bang for the state?
Yeah, in some of the areas that I've already mentioned, so on education and job training, for example, we need to be putting a lot of money behind out-of-school learning time to help kids make up for the learning loss that occurred during the pandemic. I've written about this extensively, so more funding for after-school programs, summer programs to help kids make up for that lost time. I think also supporting small businesses, particularly helping them offer incentives to people to come back to work. That's something that we should be spending stimulus money on. And continuing to support the public health effort as well, because we're not out of the woods yet. But going forward, the things that I want to prioritize are education, 21st century infrastructure, and then innovation, which to me means a couple of different things. It means leaning into a transition to a clean energy economy, because that's the direction the world is headed, and Rhode Island should be a leader, not a laggard, and recognizing that the most innovative businesses are small businesses, and they deserve our support.
When you announced your campaign for governor on Tuesday, you left your event without taking questions from reporters. You did hold another campaign event later in the day where you did speak with some reporters. But why announce a run for governor? In effect, you're asking for every person in the state to support you, but you were not initially willing to take questions from reporters. Why not?
Well, we did take questions from reporters on the day that I announced. We've also been doing a series of interviews in the subsequent days, and we're going to have another press availability early next week.
And I appreciate you joining us right now, but why not take questions at your initial campaign event?
Again, we did take questions the day that we announced. We had a media availability the day we announced. We've been doing interviews ever since, and we're going to have another media availability early next week. And many, I am sure, during the course of the campaign.
You are serving your second term as state general treasurer. You will have 8 years as treasurer under your belt by the time you leave that office. Will that be the longest period of time that you've held a job?
Yeah, I've been honored to serve as state treasurer for the last 7 years. We've gotten a lot done in that time. We led the state school construction program that's put 20,000 people to work fixing school buildings. You know, helped create a green infrastructure bank, helped hundreds of small businesses get loans, led the pension fund to an all-time high.
Let me hold you there because I've got a follow-up question. So if your longest job is in state government, how would you respond to the criticism or the view perhaps from Governor McKee? He has run a small business. He's been a mayor of a municipality. We know that Helena Foulkes, the former CVS executive, is looking at possibly getting into the race for governor. She has some pretty high-level business experience. How would you respond to potential critiques from your rivals that they have better work-life experience than you?
Well, again, I would argue that over the full span of my career, I have an ideal set of experiences to serve as governor. I started out my career as a public school teacher. I taught in a lower income, predominantly African-American community. I then went back to school myself, got an MBA, worked in an investment firm up in Boston, rose from the ranks in that firm, from an associate to a portfolio manager to a vice president. And then I was elected state treasurer in 2015, and I've spent every day as treasurer delivering results. And I think the thing that will set me apart in this race from whoever else decides to run is that I have a real track record in the treasurer's office of delivering results on job creation and economic growth through our school construction initiative, through the infrastructure bank, through our bank local program that's helped hundreds of small businesses. Every candidate in every race will tell you that they are the ones who can grow a stronger economy. But we've actually done it from the treasurer's office. And if we can do all that from the treasurer's office, just wait and see what we do from the governor's office.
Does it concern you that Helena Foulkes may get into the race for governor and perhaps draw from the same pool of voters who would be likely to support you?
Whoever decides to run, I think the thing that will set us apart is that we have a record of job creation from the treasurer's office, and we have a very coherent and ambitious vision for how to build a stronger economy for Rhode Island. That'll be the differentiator for us, and that's the message that we're going to be running on.
Speaking of job creation, the Johnston Town Council this week approved a massive distribution center for Amazon. Johnston officials see this as an economic win, but critics say Amazon does not have a good record on workers' rights. Is this a good form of economic development for Rhode Island?
You know, I have not been briefed on the Amazon plan yet. I'm looking forward to being briefed on it by the Commerce Department. But what I'll say is this. Generally, I'm in favor of economic development that supports good jobs in Rhode Island. And so if this is a project that will bring good jobs to the state, jobs that pay well, I'm all for it. We need to balance, as I think you're pointing out, economic development with protections for workers. That's why I've been a longtime supporter of a $15 minimum wage. It's why I support stronger enforcement of state workplace safety laws. When it comes to this development, I look forward to being briefed on it and learning the details. We need to have a proactive economic development agenda in Rhode Island, and that's something I will prioritize as governor. And we can do that in a way that also supports workers, because at the end of the day, that's what this is all about, is about lifting people up.
Finally, your chief responsibility as treasurer is overseeing the state's pension fund. You've had the benefit of serving during a bull market, and the pension fund has climbed over $10 billion for the first time. I wonder what you make of the Federal Reserve. It seems to bail out the market whenever there's the slightest sign of trouble for investors. Is it just putting off into the future some kind of greater economic disaster?
The Federal Reserve was remarkably effective in responding to both the 2008-09 financial crisis and the economic downturn surrounding COVID last year. You know, they got money into the system, they prevented deflation, they helped keep the economy alive. When times are good, you need to have the discipline to then pull back on that loose money so that you have some dry powder for the next time that you need it. I think we're getting to the point where they need to rein things back in, you know, to some extent. But, you know, at the end of the day, I have a lot of respect and a lot of faith for Jerome Powell. I think he's a good chair. I think that Janet Yellen before him, who has a Rhode Island connection as a Brown grad, was also a very good Fed chair. You're right to say that we should keep an eye on it because we don't want the Fed to be inflating asset bubbles forever. But I think they've been remarkably effective in responding to both the current crisis and the financial crisis in 2008-09.
General Treasurer and Democratic candidate for governor, Seth Magaziner, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
That's all the time we have today. As usual, you can find a lot more on our website at thepublicsradio.org. I'm Ian Donis.